Hi, I'm Josh, and I want to read with the trees inscribe. I want to be safe in bed, then poof, I'm outside. I'll be found naked in the freezing rain, where the woods have no name.
Excellent.
Wow. Well played. Excellent. Well
played. I've been waiting so long to do that. Almost a week.
Yowza. Hey, this is Matt, and so far the greatest revelation of this episode has been Josh thinks about his intro before the show starts.
And the only one who can.
Good point. I used to write down things, and I would try to come up with an idea. I think the biggest one probably was doing the Duke of Earl for Babadook. That was the one that I was like, I'm gonna write it down like I'm Alan Sherman, like coming up with lyrics. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna play the boys this on the piano. But anymore, my brain just sort of like, I sit down and goes, oh, I should think of something clever, and my brain just goes, yeah, good luck with that. This is Charlie down in Austin. Let's see here. So, never mind. I was just, well, Death of a Unicorn was a movie that we did.
And we are the podcast equivalent of Will Poulter's magnificent eyebrows, and we are Harsh a Hot Dog.
Oh, what a brow that man has.
Oh, what a brow.
So first up, we have a short called Pleasant Inn, or Posada Agradable. It's agradable. Mm-hmm. Before I started this, I said, ooh, an animated short. Those are always neat. They're like always beautiful to look at and frequently funny and like, you know, usually light fare. Then this one went full like Japanese horror manga and it was like beautifully, beautifully done. And genuinely unsettling. And so I got to give him a double thumbs up. Like, that's very impressive.
Hooray. Yeah, it was like, I kept thinking that the phrase that popped in my head was like Splinter, as told by Clive Barker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, God, just
giggity. There was a lot of skittering. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, they're looking right at you with the big dead ass grin thing. That's just, but not the instantaneous one, the one that like you look at a thing and then it grins at you like, ah, no.
Yeah, so your face just wasn't just that way, like hanging on the body. Like, you specifically have now made a facial gesture at me.
Yeah, like, I don't, like, no acknowledgement whatsoever. Well, another thing, too, is that, like, unless I missed something, like, I was watching this closely, but, like, there's no real context for who our person is,
nope.
Who the other lady is at the hotel, who the mustache guy is. Like, there's no real explanation, per se. It's just sort of like, we know that our girl is there. She's there by herself. She's quasi-friendly with like the neighbor person. It's like a rundown kind of a roadside joint. And that's kind of it. Like, that's all we really get.
And then it's just like if the story of this weird insectoid thing is this long chain, it's just she's one link as it goes
from
killing a person to killing a person to killing a person. It's just like, this is just going to, you know, this is a stop along the way. And that's part of what makes it, I think, so kind of a little more dreadful than, you know, just scary on its own. I do have to point out, though, that like watching this again this evening, I was reminded the most unhinged part of this short is that when our main character goes into her room to sleep in the motel she's at, she leaves the curtains open.
I know.
That is the most unhinged thing I've ever seen in a horror film. It's like, can you imagine laying down, closing your eyes, and knowing 6 feet away any number of people could just be watching you sleep?
Through like giant ass windows.
No. Yeah. Hell no. It's like, that's so fucked. Like, I get it. You had to do it for the short, but oh, that just was like nails on a chalkboard to me. But yeah.
Yeah, that was very like, the second she turned out the light, I was like, the window, the curtain is open. What is wrong with you?
It's like watching someone just like slowly reaching on like their hand toward a hot stove and you're like, stop. And they're like, uh-huh. And they just keep doing it.
Like, why are you doing this?
Self-evidently a bad idea.
But yeah, no, I just, it was one of those things where absolutely it had all the ingredients for being a thing that I'm like, well, why isn't there more context? Why isn't there more of this? Why do we know this? Like, in this situation, I'm like, nope, it doesn't, I'm just fine. I'm totally fine. Like, it was just sort of like, it just treated you to this very unpleasant, very unsettling thing. And it's just sort of like, it's like, start, middle, end, gh. And it's like, well done, dude. Like, man, I don't know how you do this live action without having some serious dough behind it. Because
mm-hmm. Yeah, think, it would be cool, but holy hell, yeah, you'd have
to. Yeah, I mean, just trying to get the, you know, the just the turning around of the head by itself, let alone the up the walls, down the thing, and all the rest of the stuff, and like, I mean, it can be done for sure. You know, of course, I mean, shit, like a Splinter. It's, you know, Splinter's awesome. I love that movie very much. But yeah, I don't know how you do this live action, but and the art style too was an interesting choice too, because like, I've, you know, and I've liked a lot of them too, but a lot of the animated ones tend to go with that kind of like Pixar-esque yeah. kind of look about them, kind of bubbly everything, and so to have this be almost like a oil painting kind of vibe to it, that kind of added to it too. It reminded me of the of that animation on glass, kind of like the Old Man and the Sea. Mm-hmm. One that they did it a long time ago, that short, where it's like, yeah, it's like animation on glass. They used to do it on Reading Rainbow and on Sesame Street and stuff, where they would animate on panes of glass and it would kind of mush into each other. Oh, and then also the Vinton, the
oh, the Vincent Van Gogh one, yeah.
The Van Gogh one, yeah, but then there's a the claymation guy, Hal Vinton, is that right?
Oh,
the Christmas special with the dinosaurs, and they do the different, they do the California Raisins, and then they do.
Did he do the Pee Wee's Playhouse stuff?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, same
guy. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yep.
And so, but then in that Christmas special, one, I've got the VHS somewhere. It's I think it's on YouTube. You can find it on YouTube, but you can find the California Raisins in there a little bit. But there's one in there that's done in that painting style on glass, but it's like it's like clay that's sort of like on a flat. Sort of.
I feel like I have a tinge of that in my memories.
Blends into itself. It's beautiful. It's so neat. Funny little factoid: the California Raisins, the armatures that are inside of the California Raisins. John Alberti, who's a lifelong friend of our family's, who did Winstone editions, you know, the dragons and the dragon eggs and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Those sculptures. He made all the armatures for the California Raisins.
Huh.
And so
and I just forgot my social security number.
Wait, what?
Well, because there, I only have so much memory.
Oh, now you have to remember this factoid. Yeah,
Vanna White played the lead in Brigadoon.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Paul Reiser. But yeah, no. As a kid, I mean, you go back to his workshop, and he made, because they use airbrushing in their artwork. You know, so he got tired of basically being like having to buy all these parts for all these, because they were making a lot of the sculptures and stuff, and so he started machining his own nozzles and bits and stuff for all the airbrush stuff. And then they live in North Hollywood at the time, in the Sunland area. And so they get a lot of people in the movie business, and they're like, they have people be like, oh, can you make this? Can you make this? And then he'd be like, yeah. And then he would just sort of work on stuff. So he did the armatures for all the California Raisins, and then the changing mechanism for the ghost in Ghostbusters, the librarian.
Oh, yes.
So like, yeah. There's a picture. My mom has it somewhere. We looked up for it last time. We couldn't find it. There's a picture of like 6-year-old or 7-year-old me, 7 or 8, somewhere like that, standing next to that fucking thing.
damn.
And but like, yeah, we should go over that. You remember that King Kong movie that Jeff Bridges did like in the early 80s?
Yeah, that messed me up. Rips a dude in half.
Yeah, that one. So they had for many years on their back porch. They had the arm. King Kong's arm. It was like on their back porch. But you know how this stuff goes with most props and things for Hollywood stuff. Like, it's not built to last, it's built to do its job. And then, kind of whatever. Eventually they had to just get rid of it because it just got mold and it was deteriorating and scuzzy and weird and like fleas and bugs and stuff. But for many years, they had this gigantic King Kong arm on their porch. So I was thinking through that, all this to say that one kind of that blendy animation style reminds me of this short. And it's such an interesting choice given what people do a lot with animation kind of as a default anymore.
Some of it is, it feels rotoscoped too.
Yeah,
and in that like waking life kind of looking thing, but with more of a painterly aspect to it. But it felt, and that works for the horror too, because it makes even the humans seem just a little bit off. And that makes the creepy thing seem very much off, like even more so when it shows up, I feel like, because everything's already moving a little unnaturally.
Yeah, and then you add like the insectile, herky-jerky, mm-hmm. really rapid movements, and it's just like, oh, that's flicking a lot of alarm bells in my little
brain here.
Yeah, and so I was realizing, too, as we talked about this, I've been thinking of it in my head as the alien, but there's no reason to think that, is there?
Yeah, no,
it shows up.
Could just be a
me adding narrative. Yeah, interesting. All right.
Okay. Well, let's move on then, and we could talk about...
Death of a Unicorn?
Yeah. Death of the Unicorn, La Muerte del Unicorn, you know.
Huh. I'm sure you're not even swing at that one. We're just...
listen, I was trying to pull it up. Oh, Unicornio. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice try, Spanish.
Spanish is phoning it in today.
Unicornio.
It reminds me of when anybody asked my high school Spanish teacher what the Spanish word for something that's almost the same in English was, mm-hmm. she would say refrigerador, which is a refrigerator. And so, you know, somebody says, what's chocolate in Spanish? You go, refrigerador.
That's awesome.
Like, oh, thank you. And also garaje, because it's just garage, but with a J.
Nice.
Anyway, Death of the Unicorn is the thrilling tale of Paul Rudd, who is now a 20-something dad, which, okay. And Jenna Ortega, who is still somehow that young. So Paul Rudd is Jenna Ortega's dad, and they have a dead mom situation going on, which seems to be every single movie I see these days.
Disney style.
So Dead is the Mom, Minecraft movie also weirdly Dead Mom. Have dad and daughter, dad trying to reconnect with daughter while he is bringing her to meet his eccentric boss, who is just Richard E. Grant doing that thing that he does really, really well. And on the way through the private nature reserve that these rich weirdos live on, they hit a unicorn with their car. And from there, it just kind of commits to a weirdness that it never lets go of. And I appreciated that so much, that there was never a moment where they just were like, yeah, we'll just, and you can see where it goes from here. They just,
weird is exactly the word both myself and my friend Sean said first blush walking out of the theater. Is like, well, that was really weird. Yeah, that was weird. Where'd you land on the weird scale, Charlie?
Yeah, it doesn't, and it's very pedestrian, and this is not meant to be a slight necessarily, but it's a very pedestrianly weird thing. It's like...
it's low-key in its weirdness.
Yeah, it's not big, over-the-top, like, you know, look at me kind of weirdness or whatever, or like to be cool or...
I just edited out some technical difficulties, or maybe I didn't. I haven't done the editing yet. We've incurred the difficulties. So we may fix that in the future, but...
The pedestrian weirdness that is not an insult.
Oh, yeah. So, like, they take things very... literal, like there's a little bit of kind of what they were living at the beginning about what the situation is, but then very quickly it's just sort of like, yes, we are living in a world where there's these magical, you know, unicorn things, and like it's a thing, and it's like, huh, all right, cool, and then just kind of roll with it, and it's like, all right, and it's just kind of like, there's no really, after the very beginning of the kind of reveal of the thing, there's like a little bit of it, and then after that, everybody's like, "Yeah, well, this is what the world is now." That there's a world that like unicorns in, and it's kind of like it's kind of there's really no stopping to kind of freak out, which is amusing and just in the fact that it is odd that it's sort of like they just kind of roll, you know. It's like,
I had trouble kind of zeroing in on if I was into it or not, because like the weird being a pedestrian tone thing makes sense, because like. I went in kind of thinking we'd end up with some version of like Violent Night, but instead of Santa, it's a unicorn, and isn't that silly, right? And what we got is something much closer to like Poor Things, where you just have weirdness incorporated into a world of people otherwise arguing about relatively mundane things, and it's just set against the backdrop of weirdness. Because when you get the whole, like, oh, they hit the unicorn on the way in, and then they go to the mansion thing with all the other people, and I'm figuring, okay, they'll make a little hay out of, like, hiding that, and then the unicorn rampage ensues. But no, like, two-thirds of the movie is that. It's just the, like, muttering about trying to weasel your way into the company and wills and, you know, powers of attorney and whatnot. And that was really, like, it kept making me feel like this movie just wasn't getting going, but I think I was maybe calibrated for the finale rather than the journey.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the first half, but they do spend a little while just hanging out with the rich weirdos and letting them be weird. But they're not like Hudson Hawk, Richard E. Grant weird.
No, it's not bonkers.
To begin with, yeah, like they're, and it's not Saltburn, thank the baby Jesus. But yeah, I do enjoy just the idea that they didn't know the unicorns existed, even though they were like in that estate, right? So, but they didn't know the unicorns existed. And once they realize that there are unicorns, they absorb it into their worldview so fast.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is just like we found a new like kind of plant that can cure a disease. Like, this is just another natural resource for us to exploit. And the fact that it does some really strange shit doesn't matter. It's just what we can get out of it. I thought that was very sharp.
Yeah, it's not a, there's no marveling at the discovery. There's kind of marveling at their own brilliance and coming up with marketing already.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's where all the back padding happens, which is, yeah, it is very strange. And it ends up just being a very, it's definitely like a bit heavy handed and it's, you know, messaging, but it spends a lot more time on making hay out of that relationship again, more like I'd said earlier, more than I thought they would, which is maybe my perception of it being a very long time just shows that I was not that into that part.
Yeah,
but
yeah. I really like, though, they've got them pitched at a level where they're not annoying, and having seen the Minecraft movie this weekend,
yeah.
I want to point out that you can have them be weird but not annoying. Like, Will Poulter's character is just dropping the dumbass lines with deadly precision and perfect timing. Like,
yeah.
There's enough space between each of them, and he never is like unrealistically shitty, I guess. He's just,
but believably clueless. Character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, in the same way they don't make Jenna Ortega a vegan with pink hair and hairy armpits that's has to tell everyone all of those things, you know, like they stop short of a lot of that stuff. And I found that kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a smart thing too. And even Poulter's character is like, it's kind of a good example where he'll, you know, he's very, you know, out of touch, kind of dweeby sort of rich, you know, kind of nerd, but he also like has a couple of moments that are almost like, that are basically human, you know, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's like one line when he's in the hot tub where he says something and he's like, oh, like, oh, that's surprisingly normal. And then there's a couple of other interactions. Like, there's some predictably silly, out of touch rich people things, but I like that they weren't done so to a caricature level that it's like, oh, for God's sake.
Like, compared to Saltburn, which was supposed to be more grounded than this, like, there's not a single unicorn in Saltburn, just the one horn.
But it's harder to believe. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there it was more over the top in that.
Well, that's why I kept thinking of like Rare Exports and Harry the Hendersons. Like, that, this feels more like that realm.
These things have some unique lore that makes them kind of extraterrestrial, and like their magic operating more on like a magnetic level, like electromagnetic level.
Yeah, it is weird how much, speaking of Harry and the Hendersons, Charlie, like how much this maps onto so many kids' movies from the 80s of meet magical creature, you know, whatever it might be, extant thing, have some kind of interaction with it, have some kind of conflict that's resolved by it, and then release it back into where it came from with your lives magically improved. And it's like, oh shit, this is Benji. Like, interesting.
Or Mac and Me.
Yeah, exactly. Less wheelchairs falling off a cliff. And
yeah, that's
more stuff. The ripoff of Mac and Me, E.T.
Yeah, exactly. They sold out for candy licensing.
Like, oh, how dare they make that movie, make our movie before we did. Bastards.
So the thing I've been struggling with this one, and I've been going back and forth, is I did really like it. Like, I really liked it. I really thought the whole thing was very creative and unique and kind of just a really cool idea. I really struggle with, like, why does it not feel like just the biggest, like, attack the block amazingness that it could be? And it's just sort of, it doesn't have that energy level, I guess. You know, where, like, I did like it. It's like, I didn't like dislike it. It plays a lot more kind of flat in kind of a strange way.
If it makes you feel better, this also landed in sort of the dreaded meh category for me too, where I'm not mad at it, but, like, this didn't really give me any, like, real visceral reactions in any direction. You know, it wasn't quite funny enough. It wasn't scary enough. I would imagine it's too gory for the crowd that might have thought the other two were okay. So I was walking out trying with Sean to figure out, like, who is this for? You know, because it's being pulled in all these directions. And that means that, to me, it kind of ends up with everything playing right towards the middle, and it just ends up being kind of a shrug. But
I don't know. I laughed through it almost all the way through with Jess, and we had, like, even a couple of, like, oh shit, all right, like, actually getting into it moments. It's just they don't come from, you know, like, what makes Attack the Block work real well is we really are rooting for those characters.
Yeah.
And it's so just character based, and these people are not worth rooting for, except for maybe Jenna Ortega, but then it kind of throws off that she's Jenna Ortega and she can't help but give off her own vibe. I don't know, maybe it's when you have a movie that has a cast like this, you just can't take it seriously. Because it's, you know, Richard E. Grant and Will Poulter and Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega are all, like, strike me as non-serious people, I guess. Like, you don't cast them for gravitas, you know, it's a different thing.
Or at least you wouldn't put this permutation of actors together for gravitas without making it very clear that you're going for something gut-wrenchingly serious. But maybe that is an expectation thing for me, again, of expecting it to be a little more, I don't know what, silly, I guess, or something. But yeah,
I was just here for not ever backing down on all the weird ass alien unicorn lore.
Yeah, that was
cool. Yeah.
To the point where they have the electromagnetic bond with Jenna Ortega and she can, like, fly through unicorn space and check out the meaning of life and shit. Like, oh, this is very heady stuff to put in a movie. And
when they were doing the initial, yeah, like, she touches the unicorn horn, you get the big CGI going through the galaxy nebula thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, boy, I hope this movie just keeps pushing in this direction, because this is fucking weird, but it looks cool. And if this is just going to be like, holy shit, she's got mind powers and can talk to unicorns, or like, yes, make this weirder. And they did go weird, but like you said, Charlie, I think it's just, it went for a more chilled out, laid back weird. That I was, again, rooting for.
Well, and then you get these people that are this talented. You get people that are like you know, Taleone and Richard E. Grant.
It's super good to see her up and about.
Yeah, and she was, she's fabulous. She has some of my favorite lines in this stuff. Like, the thing about the, you know, he makes my famous Moussaka.
Something Moussaka, yeah.
It's like, yeah. Jesus Christ. And the thing where she does her little shrug, the thing about the refugees, like, do we vaccinate them? Huh? Like, that whole thing, it's like, oh my God. Like, and then she's talking about a bunch of gerbils. Like, it's just like, oh, and it's like, and she doesn't, there's no mugging. It's just like, she just is, I don't know. She's got this, she's very impressive as an actor. Like, I always really enjoy watching her just because, like, she just has a little bit more, like, chutzpah. And I really appreciate watching her.
They're definitely playing their characters like a Christopher Guest movie, where there's no wink and nod, I think, to the audience. They're just really in insane situations and reacting like completely irrational people would. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm glad that it exists. I mean, it's like one of those things. Like, I enjoyed it. I had fun with it, you know, for sure. And like, but it was just one of those things. Was like, you know, maybe it's just that damn thing of like the expectation game where you get the like, you know, going in, you know, expecting the kind of energy level that that like Attack the Block has, and this is not really Attack the Block, you know, necessarily. It's like it's just a different tempo. And then also, like, you know, Paul Rudd's character sort of like has a weird, like, kind of flat arc, where it's sort of like, you know, he's never really like a bad guy at the beginning, and he's not really, doesn't really come full circle at the end. It's kind of, he just sort of is like a guy, and you're like, oh, well, all right.
I prefer to think that he is his character from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and it just all grown up, you know. Yeah. He finally moved off the island, but he never stopped looking just a little bit dazed all the time, right? Now, there's a lot to like here, though. I like the two scientists too, and their antics. Those were very entertaining.
Oh yeah, there's the one gal from Glow,
who's got the full full Alfred. Yeah,
no, Hank is so great. He has one little bit where he like does a little turn out of a room where it's like, if this was like a Noises Off level day, it would be a big Tim Curry-esque kind of like, whoa, you know, whatever else. But he just does this little kind of curt little turn, boop, and then and it's like, oh, fucking god damn it. If you've not watched Barry, he plays this character called Noho Hank and he's fabulous in that. He's so good. And so it's like, we see him pop up in this one, it's like, but it's a different, it's a different character, and the way he's playing is different. It's like, ah, it's fabulous. So it was great to see him, and that was great to see him pop up there, and he's so funny too. And so yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. It's like, I don't want to seem like I don't like it. It's just kind of like yeah, it's one of those tricky things.
I agree that it's kind of, I feel like if this weren't A24, it would have gotten down to a PG-13 with some pretty easy cuts, right?
Yeah.
And then it would have just been a little less edgy, but a little more accessible.
Yeah.
And that seems like a decent way to go about it. But then again, like, I'm part of the audience that enjoys a good splat sticky gore kind of movie.
Yeah, I would easily be complaining about the PG-13 version. Not
like ever. I'm happy for it. For me, I just think the reason why it didn't do that.
But
well.
Yeah, I agree. No, I totally agree. But I would be complaining about that too. So I'm just like the wrong guy.
So I think I had a better time with this than y'all did. Maybe it was just seeing it in the theater with Jess and having surprisingly full, but tiny theater. You know, there's probably 20 other people, but just laughing along with it gave it that energy boost that it needed to get it through.
Mm. Yeah, that's another thing. I think you actually touched on something very kind of key with something like this, where if you do have a theater full of people, or you have that energy to it, like, that can definitely forever make that be the thing. Like, there's been tons of festival movies that way, but then also like Attack the Block, my first time I saw Attack the Block was that way. Like, it was, it was me, Kristen, Devereaux, and Justin from back home. We went and then got dinner or whatever else. And like, but it was full theater. Like, it was completely full, like, maybe a couple extra seats. It's one of the big ones at the South Lamar Alamo. And like, and so it's just like, people were just having a blast and hooting and just having a great old time. So that really like, just that does something to the experience of it. Like, that just does something to the feel of it. And then when I went to go see this, there was like me and like two other people. And like, I think I probably did the most laughing.
So. Fair enough. Yeah, I would say for me, surprisingly, it's about it's still an 8 out of 10. Man, that hunting expeditions.
I don't know. I think I've said about everything about this. I need to everybody knows what I think. Again, not mad at it. Just wish it had sparked more joy in me. I wanted to like this, but lands in meh. So this is 5 out of 10. 5 out of 10, pretty satisfying unicorn disembowelings.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough. Mm. Yeah, the up through the mouth bit was just like, that's just terrific. Yeah. This is good stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like in this, and I can't say enough how much I really love their you know, they're just committing to this very odd, but I would say pretty unique and creative premise. I really, I really appreciate that part of it, but it's like, but it does kind of, I do really think it does kind of fall into that realm potentially of just sort of being like, you know, like what is the wheelhouse for the thing like this? Or, you know, like where does it fit? And not because the art has to fit. I mean, you know, was it what Rick Rubin said about the last thing you consider when you're making art is the audience. So I mean, like, you know, I get that part of it for sure. But yeah, that said, I mean, you know, the movie business is weird, and like, you know, there's a pedigree of these type of movies that like, was it most recently was Renfield. Was that where it's like I fucking love that movie. That movie is a blast. I think it's great. I just had a ball beginning to end. But I would also argue that like that one falls in a very specific category of people that would like a fun adventure comedy, but are just no problem with just like guts and blood and shit flying everywhere. Like,
yeah, you know that may be the best comparison for this one. It does have that same level of not quite broad as a barn, but not at all normal. Kind of like mid-tone. Mid-tone? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a mid-tone.
Yeah.
I still really enjoyed it. And like I said, I really, really admire the creative chutzpah to make a thing like this with this premise and then just see it through in that respect. So I mean, I really, really admire that a lot. There's a lot of people I like in this. A lot of funny bits that I enjoyed, and like the unicorn violence was very enjoyable. So, you know, I think like 7. Like, I, you know, like there's a lot that I enjoyed, and I really tip of the hat to the creative what's about to do it. And sadly, it has not done particularly good at the box office, but I still really admire that it exists. And I'll be very curious to see when this becomes available, like, you know, viewing at home and rental and doing whatever, if there's going to be any kind of special features when it comes to like additional footage or additional scenes or other kinds of stuff. Because, you know, I was saying text message, we were sort of like, you know, and Josh was teasing me about my thing about like always wanting to have more people. But I just keep like, I keep thinking like, if you added like some townies, or you added some campers, or you added something, you know, other kind of component to it, if it becomes more of a romping adventure thing in that respect. But so I'd be curious to see if there was any kind of other stuff in there. But as it stands, like, yeah, like an enjoyable, fun, admire the creativity, 7, you know, 7 out of 10, 7 out of 10, or 7 out of 10, pardon me. Always with the dead moms all the time. Lots of dead moms.
It is a Pixar movie.
I was just thinking of just in the last year, how many of them there I've seen. And I can think of at least If and Minecraft and this one. I don't know. I'll have to put the list together because I think there are a bunch.
Start using that as a tag on.
And we go like, oh, is it Letterboxd? Dead Mom? Was it cancer or a car crash? Those are the only two things that kill moms.
Those are the acceptable ones. Yep.
Yeah.
If is another one that, like, for God's sakes, like, people just watch that wrong. Mm. It was so good.
I enjoyed it, but I did roll my eyes at the beginning, where it's like, your mom's dead, but you still have your dad. Your dad has cancer.
Jesus.
Oh, and also, just another thing about just real quickly, when, you know, people aging into, like, you know, with people aging into, like, that type of thing. Yeah, I was telling you guys about how it was like, you know, watching The Pit, like how fucking fantastic it is. But Sean Atossi pops up in there as like kind of a more minor role as like the other resident doctor. And he's like, he's like a little bit of gray hair and like is like, you know, dad age kind of person. And I looked it up and homeboy is 40 fucking 9 years old. And it's like, no, he's not. He's in high school, and where there's kind of these alien creatures taking over people's brains. Like, yeah. That's what he is. He's in high school. He's not 40. The guy, neither is Devin Sawa, for that matter. Like, fuck's sake. God damn it all.
Empire Records with my son for Rex Manning Day, as one does.
Yeah.
And just seeing Ethan Embry. And he's like, I don't want to say Ethan Embryo, but honestly, we had no idea how big he was going to get.
Well, and that whole, there's half of that fucking cast. And like, it's just sort of like you have, Ethan Embry, of course, and Renee Zellweger, and Liv Tyler. And it's just like, God, son of a gun. And it's just
that. And Coyote Shivers.
And what's her name? Robin Tunney? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Debbie Mazar, yeah.
Yeah, so
for Bibi Mazar and her laser eyes.
But and you were there, and you were there.
There are a lot of people in Death of a Unicorn as well, so
that works. True.
It's people all over the place.
There is one, thinking about deleted scenes, there is one part where she goes crashing through the window and it's daylight suddenly, and then it's just daylight for the rest of the movie, and I was like, hang on.
Yeah, I remember being...
feel like we've been following these guys pretty consistently through the entire night. Where did those like 6 hours
go? Yeah, when she like out of the bedroom and then she just kind of like hits with the ground with a thud and it's daytime.
I was like, the fuck?
Yeah.
But none of them seem surprised, so. Yeah, I do wonder if there was something that was cut out of
maybe
that.
Maybe there was. Know,
like with Empire Records there, where it was originally 2 days and now it's 1 day. Yeah, we're learning tonight, folks. That's what we're doing.
That's one of my favorite aspects of Empire Records. As much as I love that movie, by the time we get to the nighttime with the fundraiser and the concert on the marquee, and all of them still have lots of energy, and you're like, no, you don't. No, you the fuck don't. You guys have had quite the... And especially and Lucas. I mean, Lucas was in Atlantic City, back over the thing, or Vegas, rather, back over the thing, and all that stuff, and they had a full day, and it's nighttime, and it's like, when's it, midnight? They have big
but remember, we're old as we think that. At 22 or whatever, yeah, a cup of coffee, Snickers, you'd be good.
I guess, but good Lord. Probably at least it's got to be like, hey, I'm going to take a...
Well, yeah, that dude should be out. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Then again, he's also the one buying Coke.
So. Can I tell you one thing that I learned last night?
But only one.
Watching Empire Records. World-weary, wise, old Anthony LaPaglia in that movie?
Oh, God, don't.
39 years old. He's not even 40.
Pain.
He can still go camping without an air mattress.
Oh, the pain.
It's like, oh, he's my dad. 9 years younger than I am. Anyway, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our other stuff.
Yes, sir.
Hey. Next up, we have Without Name or Sin Nombre. This is a somber Irish thing, which is even more somber and more rural than a somber rural thing, turns out.
Yep.
We have our kind of very taciturn, stoic Irish scientist who, or a surveyor, who goes out to a cabin near a big stretch of woods that doesn't have a name, and he's trying to survey the land so that it can be developed, and... land doesn't seem to want that, and he finds the journal of the last guy who lived there, who was learning how to read the language of the earth and the trees, and who is currently in a coma in the town's tiny hospital. So we have something weird in the woods. We have the kind of hippie who lives on the edge of the woods, and our surveyor guy and surveyor guy's girlfriend, who is distinct from his wife, who with whom he has a child. I feel like this thing ends up being a little unsettling, but it is also very, very patient. We'll say patient. There are frequent shots that are like 10 to 15 second zoom in or out of a plant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, you will get to know this forest on a pornographic level.
There are patient movies that work, right? Mm-hmm. And that's... I've watched this twice because I was convinced I'd watched it wrong the first time. Because it just was a nothing burger to me. And I appreciated it a little more the second time. I still don't quite think it works. But... the thing I kind of thought I was about to latch onto, at least the first time, was, okay, this is Irish Session 9, maybe, with like, okay, there's some weird pressures happening in this guy's life, and then you're going to add in the weirdness of isolation in a place, and then you can bring someone else out, but then maybe that's a threat too. All right, maybe this will be all this real intense, like, oh, nope, wait, it's just a little kind of creepy bit, and then it just stops. I felt like we either... spent too much time in the wrong place or not enough time in the right place or both, or this just kind of failed to come together for me, as pretty as some of the shots are. Like,
yeah, I really struggle with this one. I really struggle with, because there's parts of it that worked. I think unsettling is a good word for it, but it like reminded me, it very much reminded me of like two things. It reminded me of the Finnish movie Sauna. And it reminded me of this British one called The Shout from like the late 70s, early 80s, where like there's just sort of a very straightforward setup of like, this is this, and this is this. It's just like you just clearly define that there's this bad thing, and then there's this normal thing, and then you kind of mush them. They kind of get all blendy and screwy at the end. And like in like Sauna, it's like it gets to the end, like the last third doesn't make a lick of sense. I've seen that movie multiple times and I still can't figure the fuck out. And then The Shout is like presented very much of like this like kind of academic researchy thing where like this telekinetic sort of person in this village, like they can use like sound waves and musicy things and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, and then again, the last third doesn't make any fucking sense. And so then like with this one, it's like the same basic thing where like there's kind of like this kind of uneasy thing, kind of like this like a foreboding evil old gods kind of thing going on. But it's like it, for all the promise and setup and some kind of eerie moments in the first two thirds, the last third, they just like just relentlessly march up their own butts with all the kind of the spinning camera stuff and the flashing trees and all this nonsense.
And oh, you didn't like the 2001 tree sequence? Like, I was kind of into that.
If it was like a fifth as long, where it, like it just gives little bolts of things. Because like
by the time we got there, I was checked out. Where that was just it was like trying to do CPR on the actual dummy while the drowned person lays next to you.
Well, because they showed like they can really do some really hellacious stuff with the camera work with those fucking forests in certain parts of Europe that you can't see through.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't like they just it's that thing where it just becomes like this like a curtain, and it's just like bleh. And they did some really great fucking around with that, and like it was really uneasy and very very dicey. But then once we kind of went into the kind of like him losing his shit sort of section of things to the end, it was sort of like I just was like, all right, I'm trying to pay close attention, but again, I'm missing something or whatever. It's like, and so there was like a less of a. Sometimes I feel like that there needs to be more like a tragic. Something tragic about it necessarily, whereas like there's nothing kind of missing from that one. But then the other thing that got me too is that the lady who plays the girlfriend, Neame Alger, she's an Irish actress lady, she's great. Like I've seen her in a few other things. She's really great in the show with Stephen Graham back from 5-6 years ago called The Virtues. She's really good in that. And she's like exceptionally good. And I'd have to say I was kind of bummed out by that kind of like a she's going up there with this older guy that she always has a relationship with, and then like, you know, he's just kind of this grumpy kind of land surveyor guy that's just like directionless in life, can't make a commitment to one direction or another, and this other thing. And she kind of goes from like funny and spirited to like just shrill and like irritating, and I don't think that was even fair to the character. I was like, that doesn't feel like this character even. Like she just kind of goes from zero to awful, and then just sort of fucks off. And they're like, God damn it! So I felt like it's like a criminal misuse of a very talented actress.
The only character that I enjoyed the company of was Hippie Guy.
Yeah,
like, he was super fun, but
yeah,
that can't sustain it with like. The whole movie is about our lead guy ending up in the woods, and like he ends up not being able to ever escape the woods because he's lying in a hospital bed in a coma, but he has become the spirit that wanders the woods, right? Like we know that's what's going to happen, but this guy is no big loss. Like we know, as soon as he steps into the cabin for the first time that he is toast. Like this is that kind of story. We know it in our bones. He's not surviving this. But then you have to still like him at least a little bit, or you know, respect him as an artist or whatever to get invested in his story. And he's just no big loss. That's the problem.
Well, it makes me think of like Jacob's Ladder with Tim Robbins, where like, you know, that one is like when you're watching all these things happen to him, it's kind of like he does kind of hurt a little bit. You're just like, God darn it. Or like The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, where it's sort of like you kind of watch this person kind of, this stuff happening to them, and you kind of, there is a there's a sort of a sad aspect to it for sure. Whereas like with this one, yeah, he's just like, he's this kind of milquetoast sort of whiny sort of directionless kind of dweeb that like, you know, she's right to call him out of being like, yeah, you're not actually going to make a commitment. So like, you know, whatever, like, don't tell me my problem with, you know, like, oh, I'm, you know, you gotta go live life or whatever else. Like, if I choose to live life a certain way, that's what I'm going to do it, but I'll commit to it at least. And he's like, bah. That's like, oh, shut up, dude. So like that, I think, was the other part of it. I think if he had more more emotional, like, things to hold on to, I think it would have hit more in the last act versus just being like, all right, let's just get to the, kind of get to it, you know? So it's like, I don't know, you know, it's kind of like a, as Josh would say, I'm not mad at it. I just sort of was like, you know, not mad, just sort of disappointed.
I just wonder, I mean, like, I wonder how it would play, but I was really the opposite of y'all in that the last third of this was what I had fun with. Mm. That all of the dire nonsense with dour Scottish Irish man and his shitty, being a shitty husband and father and all that. So that was kind of boring. You know, like, once you learn the language of the trees and you start like randomly just being outside and having no memory of how you got there and then being back in your bed. And like, all of those things were very interesting. And even up to the 2001 tree scene, like, I was very much enjoying it. It's like, you are actively pummeling my senses now. That is very cool. And, you know, it needs to stop eventually. And it did. And, you know, I guess I really liked having that creepy figure that he sees in the woods, you know, happen over and over again. And then,
yeah,
that's just the last guy who got taken by the woods. And once you fully understand that, then you become him and the other guy gets to wake up. Right. I thought that was pretty satisfying. It was just getting to the point where the narrative broke down and it could just be Bug Nutty was the tiresome part for me. Mm-hmm. Make sense?
I noticed at the beginning they had that warning about the flashing lights thing, you know, they had that warning ahead of time. I really appreciate that they do that. I think that's a good thing.
I was
curious because, Josh, you more so than Matt, I would say, have that sensitivity sometimes with like the tinnitus deal. Did any of that bug you at all? I just was curious if that triggered or harmed you in some way.
I've definitely heard it. Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering.
And then it's going to stop. See, I don't think we need to belabor this one. Compared to Starvaker, it's fucking Armageddon starring Bruce Willis and Liv Tyler. But it is a very somber thing. It's a very Irish thing. I feel like I've seen Irish somberness go better than this. And it just comes down to liking the people and having any investment in what happens to them. The Irish one, that with the dark or in the dark or near the dark or through the dark.
Yeah.
With the vampire living in the peat bog. Like,
hell yeah.
That was some good shit. This one, I liked the end of it for the screwiness of it, but it could have been screwier and it could have screwier and it could have gotten there faster. So I say it's like a 6.5 for me. It's 6.5. I don't approve of you taking mushrooms. By the way, I ate all the rest of the mushrooms.
It's a weird turn in the story there. I think the idea that maybe if our dude had been a little more charming, a little more sympathetic, a little more something, that might have helped a lot, because I do think that probably puts a fine point on my just sort of apathy, which is not great on this, and especially having like even given it a second go to see if I just had a poopy diaper the first time and was like, nope, this is just tough to stay interested in. So didn't work for me. Your mileage may vary, but yeah, 4 out of 10. Lack of four leaf clovers. I thought this was an Irish movie. That's dumb. I regret it already. Anyway,
it does have the, which I love, the thing of like the outsider walks into the local pub thing, and even though there's like two dudes, like, they still go quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, by law, they have to. That's the rule.
So good.
Like, yeah. Man, there's not even a piano player to stop playing. Come on.
You're not one of them American werewolves, are you?
It's like
I don't know why they talk like that all of a sudden, because like, it's fucking Irish.
Shay was pushing the piano. We've got an outsider.
You're not one of those American werewolves, are you? Toy.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things. Like, it has a lot of stuff that was unnerving in bits, but I think once it kind of dials into the kind of drug fueled gaping maw of the wilderness elder god thing, I just kind of was like, all right, let's kind of get to the end. And then when we kind of went with that kind of the spinning, flashing, kind of all the backy forthy business and the rest of it, I was like, I don't really care. So, I mean, it's like, I kind of, like, I'm, like I said, not mad at it. And there's a lot of stuff that I thought worked, full well. And it's, it was really cool to see. It was really cool to see somebody as talented as Neve Alger in there. It was really cool. So, like, I'd say it's kind of middle of the road. I'd say five out of 10, I kind of feel like when the spinning pendulum doohickey does in this situation, I think you kind of go like, you know what, I'm gonna get out of this spooky forest. Like, I don't think that's good. Out of 10.
Yeah, when the Earth's very magnetosphere is no longer reliable.
Yeah, that's one unbobbed plum.
Exactly. Yeah, just like once the thing starts doing that thing where it goes one direction, it goes another thing, and like, I think you're just sort of like, yep, and that's McHugh. Yep. Get the fuck out of here.
Yes.
You want me to survey the plot? It's a real big plot. Just fuck off. Just give me my money. And plot. Yep.
Well, it's like the thing in that, was that Wendigo movie from 1,000 years ago, where like they find the tracks, and like this gigantic track, like bigger than any
other. Oh, the one with Ron Perlman?
Or the other
one? Yeah.
And it's like they see the tracks, and they're like, it's bigger than any other animal. This is a big gigantic predator. And like at that point, they should all look at each other like, we out? Yeah, we out. All right, we're good. Let's totally get, we got to split.
Like, man, I got to be in Blade 2. Get out of here. But let's wrap up then with the revelations, or revelaciones. As you might imagine. Next film from the maker of Train to Busan and Peninsula. This is a more grounded movie where it stays kind of in that thriller vein. And we do see some things that are impossible, but we don't know if we're seeing them from somebody's subjective point of view. Like, you never have two people witness the same supernatural looking thing, right?
Like, yeah.
So we have to sum up the plot real quick.
Yes, quickly sum up the plot to a Korean crime drama.
Right. Yeah.
They're usually so terse.
So we have just very A to B. It's one of those tales as old as time where you have a sexual predator who's been released on house arrest, but is stalking someone and is being observed by a police officer who we later find out is the sister of the guy's previous victim who failed to save her. But he follows his prey into a church where he encounters like Pastor Skip and hears about Jesus. But Pastor Skip realizes who the man is, and then Pastor Skip sees that his son is missing from school, and then we have shenanigans front to back.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too much further into it because it feels like you shouldn't speak it all aloud, but there was no moment where I went, oh, yes, that's what I was expecting to happen.
Yeah. Again, Korean crime drama.
Kind of the opposite of with Without Name, where it was like, I know as soon as they say, this guy, previous guy who studied these woods, is in a coma in the hospital wing. Like, that's where you're headed.
Yeah. They might as well just said a lot of history down that, Rod.
Yeah. This one, no. I, at no point, there were so many times, like, the fuck? Oh.
Well, and when you introduce the possibility of real or imagined divine intervention into your crazy crime thriller, then really all bets are off, because even completely illogical decisions are justified instead of plot holes. And so,
and then they're,
well, it truly can do anything.
They're justified whether or not there really is a divine, it's that Wicker Man thing. Yeah. This guy believes in it and has the ability to actualize what he's believing. By the way, Pastor Skip starts getting religious visions that are gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Like doing the pareidolia thing where you have like a rock face in the twilight and then suddenly it's illuminated by lightning and it's Jesus. I mean, white Jesus, but you know, the Jesus.
Yeah, you know, the
yeah. One. Wasn't that, didn't that just was a little arresting when they first time they walk through the thing on the back wall? They've got BG Jesus on the wall. It's like, what the hell's happening?
Oh, also, like, I'm sure this is racist somehow, but I love it when movies in Asian cinema portray Christianity, like local Christianity.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it always, you can see that it's been filtered from this one culture to another and not all of it translated. So it's always fascinating to see how it's like the rough outline is the same, but the specifics are sometimes surprising. Mm. And so, like, it's hard to tell sometimes, like, is this dude, like, are they always kind of this feverish about stuff? Do they, like, need to be a little more fire and brimstone? Or sometimes it seems very chill and you're like, I don't know where this lands. And so for a little bit, that almost helps with the how weird is what's going on just right now. Like it throws that mental skewer off. But I do think it's fascinating to see that done.
Yeah, no, for sure. It plays a fascinating role in this because our guy that Josh about to skip, like he just sort of is like, you know, he's a fascinating character because you're like, is he just adult? Is he just this kind of milquetoast, like half-assed kind of dude, or is he just, does he have the capacity for all manner of badness just because it's like, well, God says it's cool. And it's sort of like, so is he really kind of much as unhinged or if not more so than like the bad guy? And like that adds a super different aspect to what's going on. Cause like, I'd say the first half to two third, well, maybe half, you're like, oh, he's just this milquetoast kind of guy thrust into this kind of dicey situation of which he's in over his head, and it's just like, it's like there is that part of it, but then it kind of like kind of,
well, I do think, outward. I think they're careful to make sure that we categorize him as like true believer,
yeah,
as far as the church stuff goes, because it's not him that's angling for the promotion and running the thing. He's like would hope to do that, but he's willing to do that in its time. Whereas his girlfriend is like nagging him about how that's not happening soon enough. And then his, you know, boss is simply making it happen now to cover up a scandal. And so like you get the idea that, okay, there are people that are probably more, you know, this world minded in the religious community. But the fact that you see like, oh no, he's into it. That does then make it make sense that, okay, then he is the guy that would see a religious thing and assume it's legit, especially after kind of being a little dowdy and then seemingly getting confirmation. Like, I think they do the right amount of character building around that to make that transition from normal dude to, you know, madness or religious fervor or whatever it is, you know, over that time.
Also,
have a little more impact.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Well, also, it seems like he just cannot be responsible for killing the guy.
Yeah.
And he can't be that person and live. So he is very invested in this idea that this is all God's plan. And that's when he goes off the deep end. Just so even from a psychological standpoint, without any supernatural or even that deep belief already established, you can see how he would get into, yes, this is God. This is a sign for God. And this is a sign for God. And, you know, and you finally get to, you know, like, I saw Sister Mary dancing with the devil. I saw Goody, you know, Jenkins dancing with the devil. Like, you see how quickly it would start and spread to where he's got his whole congregation just pounding on the pews by the end of it.
Well, that's kind of why his transition is so interesting, because, like, there are parts early on where he does have this, like, very kind of, like, humble servant of God sort of feel about him. But then as you start to, like, gain power, if you want to say it that way, like he just, it really morphs, like, but you're right, really right, Josh, that he's just like, his biggest thing, or the biggest thing with his character rather, is that is the overarching thing, is like the belief thing is still the main thing. Like, that's, you know, it's not necessarily like, it's sort of like, yeah, he's not a character for like the Righteous Gemstones, like it's not like that.
Yeah, he's a true believer, which is really the more dangerous guy,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and then also, so then you take all that whole thing, and then you put it against the thing of like the missing girl and the lady with her sister as a previous victim, and there's some really kind of harrowing like very dark.
Because there's a whole different movie where she's the protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and is given that extra, you know, 20% more screen time, and he's the background character. You could easily do that the other way. They're both fleshed out enough to kind of carry a plot.
Well, that's, yeah, that's like, and so you run these two things in parallel, and to Josh's point, like, at any given point, you're like, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. Like, yeah. I don't know what's, like, which is the thing. Because, like, a lot of Korean, you know, like, I love a lot of, you know, Korean kind of thriller suspense things. Like, oh, there's so many that I really love. And it's like, and but they're always long, and they're always, like, there's always a lot going on. And so, like, this, the fact that they kind of run these two kind of concurrent sort of stories that are sort of looping around each other is really kind of a fascinating kind of choice, because I think you could have it be lady whose sister was died at the hand of the serial killer chasing the killer, have that be the movie, or you can have guy who's maybe on the edge starts having things fall into place in such a way that can be interpreted as intervention of God and a validation of belief or whatever, and like that be your thing, and like so it, but it had to did both, and so it's sort of like, and so then that makes that last half of it, like, you know, to Josh's point about not really knowing what the next thing is going to happen, like I had no fucking clue as to how this was going to go.
But in terms of like, I was very tense and invested.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I mean, that whole bit of being like, you know, we're fighting the girl, and like as our pastor guy gets kind of more power and influence, and like, but behind the scenes, you've got like this thing with the killer guy, and then like the getting him out of the hospital bit, and like the all that stuff, and you're just like, what the shit is going on with that? And it's like, and so yeah, you get to the last third of it, you're like, no idea, gun to my head, couldn't tell you how this is gonna wrap itself up in the way that it's going to go. And it was just sort of like, it's like, and got, you know, high credit to them for like having this kind of, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but a very kind of ramshackle, like parts flying off the car as it's flying down the road, being, it's kind of a Dukes of Hazzard car if it was made by George S. Miller. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's just that, it's like being chased by the cops, and it's like, but it's like parts and sticks and flames. It's like, it's just, it's that kind of shape of a thing. Like it's not so taut and tight and small and narrow, but they still kind of keep it moving. You know, like it could have very easily kind of got a little plotty. Like there's that one from like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, was that, let's say, Trio, I think. We never did it for the show, but it was just one that I saw at AFS. It's good, but it's like, man alive, there's like a 9-hour miniseries in the middle. And it's like, none of it has anything to do with the end. But it's just like, we just go off on like this, like there's like this land scam and this other thing, and there's just like some embezzlement and this and that. Hey, none of it has fuck one to do with anything else. It's just like all the characters sort of interact and fold over each other, and you kind of keep going and going and going and going. And then eventually you come back to the main plot again, but there's a big section in the middle that doesn't make no damn sense in the rest of the context of the movie. And like, they don't do this, they're that here. This is more like you are very invested in what's going to occur. And it's like, that's,
yeah, it's sharp, and it doesn't have a whole lot of fat on it at all.
Does this also avoid the trope? Isn't there usually a bumbling cop in these?
Yeah,
oh, like absolutely. More rural cops.
Mm-hmm. The, you know what, like, I mean? There's like usually something where you're like, okay, this is like weird and atonal. And there was none of that,
like in,
right?
Chaz, the Keystone cops that are just like, fumbling over themselves. I feel like I saw The Devil had
a dipshit
cop or two, right?
Yeah. The guy, the precinct guy in that one, and I saw The Devil.
Yeah, or there's like, you know, a fat guy, because they like, they like making fun of fat people in these movies still. So like, you'll see some of that. It's just like weird. Like they didn't do any of the usual like lighter moments that you see in one of these, because this is pretty gripping the whole way through.
Well, and hats off to the serial killer guy too. Like early on, I was thinking like, man, it's kind of weird. The casting of this seems kind of, I don't want to say like unfair, but it seems almost kind of like you look at him and you're like, yeah, it's a creep. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, Reed's creep from like 10 feet away. But as it goes along, and as you get to the, especially that last act, it's like there's a lot more power and gravitas going on there. And he almost changes shape in a way. Like he almost like occupies a different space on screen, which, you know, again, in no small feat. And I was like, man, that's like an interesting way for that to go. Like my only tiny criticism would be that, like, the tying the girl up in the building and then like busting up the building with the backhoe thing was like, felt a little silly. If, you know, it's like a little bit of a Scooby-Doo villain kind of vibe about that.
Yeah, a little.
I don't know. Like, it wasn't bad. but it wasn't like he wasn't maniacally like like that. So it wasn't like that, but it's just it felt a little silly.
It's I don't know. In the moment, all of that worked for me very well. And you had the, you know, the building coming down and the, like the, that ticking timer and this ticking timer over here. And even the, like, oh my God, I can see that the eye of the Cyclops is that window and those pictures and fucking figure it out, lady. Come on. You're like super invested. And then afterwards you go, yeah, that bit was pretty silly compared to the other stuff that was going on in this movie when they actually had to resolve that mystery of where the girl was. That little bit feels flat in retrospect, but the rest of it, just the visions that the pastor has and the visions of her sister that the lady has, and they're just so beautifully light touch with. I actually love that they have her at the therapist say, of fucking course she's a hallucination brought on by grief. That doesn't change the way that it feels when she says these things to me, right? Like, yeah. I really appreciated that they had her be that self-aware.
Yeah, that was good.
And it was an interesting and like kind of, I don't know, it was a, it had a lot of things in it that I just was not expecting. You know, I just didn't, you know, not be like, oh, you outwitted me. But it's more just sort of like a, to take the choices that they took, especially in a kind of a, pretty decent sized scales Korean thriller is like it's pretty dope. Like, yeah, well done. You know, like it's mm-hmm. cool to kind of watch this sort of progression and deal with some of these issues and things that they sometimes don't necessarily have in this type of a thing. And yeah, it's just kind of take away that bumbling cop thing. Although I do that one shot where they're like, you know, they're like they're gonna oh this we found his car and such such thing. And there's like 53 dudes who crammed inside this one precinct office. And they're like, and then one guy who's got the suit and the tie. So, you know, he's more in charge. Mm-hmm. He's like, you go this way, you go this way. You guys go in that car, you guys carpool. You guys pick up coffee on the way. When we get there, just have one of those little coffee containers. And then you three, you go this way, you 17 guys, you go. It's like that kind of like, that was a bit funny, but it wasn't played to be funny or silly. Like it wasn't like like sometimes in the Japanese ones, you definitely get that where you get like kind of like a, opened up, and then everybody like stumbles over everything and falls over, and then they're like, okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that at all, you know, but it did, I found it amusing, because it was just all these fucking guys. It's like, this is a precinct of with an employee, like a population of 21,000 and a precinct with 153 people in it.
Yeah.
But we do get, like, some of those near misses are so close that they are almost funny. Like, you laugh because you just can't, is too tense that it
you
it
need tips to
over. Yeah, some of the stuff with the cops and finding the car definitely had that. There are so many moments when he is inches away from his cunning plan being foiled.
Yeah,
and then they figure out a way to undo it. And I don't know. This kept me guessing the whole time, and then it would occasionally just throw some really gorgeous imagery at me.
Yes.
And including the pareidolia images was really nicely done, but just the rest of it is really damn pretty.
Yeah, that is worth, I'm glad you mentioned, because that's the one last thing I definitely would say was like, for a pretty well-managed kind of thriller like this, there are some bits in this that from a film craft standpoint, you're like, my goodness gracious. Like, there's just a thing where she's the race against time thing toward the tail end. Like, we've seen that in American movies 100 times, 500 mm-hmm. times, 1,000 times. But that thing where it moves the camera up to, like, the hood at the angle and she's taking those turns, you're like, they're fucking driving. Like, they're going, like, wow. And, like, that was giving a little tingly. So I was like, man alive. Like, that was, so the little film craft bits like that, I was like, that's very, very impressive. You know, it's, I love seeing that kind of thing. It's just makes it, like, that one, Confessions, we did Memories of Murder on the show.
Yeah,
Confessions of Murder is the other one where this guy, like, you know, past statute of limitations, like, writes this tell-all book about these people, the stuff that he's involved in, and it becomes this kind of cat-mouse chasing thing. And there's bits in that have still never been matched by anybody in terms of chasing business. There's just some stuff in there you're like, my could have, I don't know how the, even Australians were like, how the fuck do you do that? Mm-hmm. You know, like, Jesus Christ. But it's like, so like, nothing will ever really beat Confessions of Murder with that kind of stuff. But there are some sequences in this that were really, really, really technically like crazy impressive. So yeah, I mean, I was just like, I want this dude to just keep making movies. Like, cause I mean, of course, Train to Busan and everything, but it's like, I just want this dude to keep making stuff. Like, he's yeah, really got sure. a flair for how to make something, keep you dialed in.
Yeah, it zips sure. along.
And mm-hmm. It's a nifty deal, and yeah. So yeah, but it's on Netflix, of course. Well, sure.
And it is weird that, I mean, it's their own fault that Netflix has become synonymous with the kind of average time passing movie.
Yeah.
And so it's a surprise when you find something that's got this much of a pulse and this much just spikiness sticking out of it at every angle. But yeah, I guess I don't feel bad. Netflix, you brought it on yourself, shoveled yeah. out a bunch of nonsense, but that does make it harder to sell someone on something. You're like, no, this is actually legit. Like, this is the real deal.
It is starting to have the same cachet that direct to video used to have in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that aside though, like, this was how a neat front to back. I'd applaud him for cutting the extra half hour that normally a movie like this would have. And I thank him so much for providing an ending and a good one. And like the pastor just scrubbing the image off the wall and finding that it still looks like a face no matter what he does. Like, that was freaking beautiful.
Yeah.
So for me, this was a 9 out of 10. It's real damn good.
Yeah, I also thought this was fantastic. This is good fun. I was a little lower, but not because of any like particular complaint. I gave it an 8 out of 10. I think this is real fun. There is something about, I don't know exactly what the special sauce is, because like we kind of mentioned, this does avoid some of the usual, tropes for these Korean dramas being really long, having the goofy segments, but like, I'll watch these all day, but I am bored to tears with any of like the American crime drama shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know
that is a thing that is true of you.
What they do different, but I would just rather sit in a room that is silent than watch Law and Order. And so I don't know what's special about these, but they're just always more interesting and entertaining. So if you've not tried any of these of the few we've seen, this is a great one to start because it's easy to get and it's a little shorter.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, there's some American ones I do like, but it's sort of, I probably watch more goddamn police procedurals than any normal person should. But it's sort of like, I mean, you know, the Korean ones. Chris and I were talking about this actually when I finished this. When I was like, yeah, it clocks in at a brisk 2 hours. Like usually with a Korean one, it's you're getting your money's worth. They're usually giving you 2.5 hours worth of the thing, or else I was telling Chris, I said they're only really surpassed by the Indian film market, because if you want a 3-hour action movie, the Indian film market is that's where you're going to get it. And then she kind of turned and she kind of grinned and she goes, and dance numbers. Right. I was like, yeah, that is, you don't see a whole lot of Korean crime thrillers that have like big old dance numbers. Like that is one component that is missing, but it is absolutely true that the Indian action movies are by far the longest. Like it's like 3 hours, 12 minutes. Like really? Wow. So yeah, so if this would have come in at clock in at 2 hours, it's in and of itself kind of an amazing thing. But not to be like a snide jackass, it's kind of funny because oftentimes you watch them, you're like, you look at the runtime, like, boy, all right, here we go.
Bold.
So this clocks in at a brisk 2 hours. So it's it's really solid. And I just want this dude to keep making movies. Like, you know, he seems to have a good eye for talent, a good eye for just kind of just assembly and technique, and then just the story itself was fascinating to watch this be constructed with basically two movies that kind of got kind of overlapped together and intertwined in a way that wasn't make you give you a headache. So I was like, man, that's pretty cool. So yeah, I really dug this. I thought this was pretty dope. So yeah, 8.5, I would say kind of split that difference. I'll say 8.5 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10. Like, is there just a rule that like if you have not the big church, that you have to have like a neon illuminated cross in a room that's highlighted by daylight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a like, wicked intense AA meeting vibe.
Right. Yeah, they always like that's the rule. Like no matter where you are in the world, that is the rule. If you have the they have the hoopty church, it has to have a neon cross and it has to have daylight. The room being highlighted by daylight. That is the rule in Korea. That is the rule in the United States. That's the rule anywhere.
Yep.
Out of 10.
I'm just enjoying hoopty church and the neon cross, which seems like some kind of film. I don't know. Hoopty church might be a detective. And the neon cross, the clan, like the gang that he's trying to bust. I don't know. We'll take a quick break, though, and we'll be back with our stuff for next time. So for next week, we are going to dig into Rule of Jenny Penn on Shudder. That's the one with John Lithgow and what's his name?
Jeffrey Rush.
Yeah. So just titans of acting, chewing scenery. Should be fun. Then we're going to watch Dead Talents Society on Netflix, kind of a horror comedy thing, which again, surprisingly, on Netflix.
Yeah.
I think that's the new TM, surprisingly.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. And then we're going to watch the latest from the Hell House LLC folks. This is 825 Forest Lane. And if it succeeds, we look forward to 825 Forest Lane Bloodlines. The Rise of Bob Johnson Origins, you know, and the Philosopher's Stone. So, 825 Forest Lane, Dead Talent Society, and the Ruler Jenny Penn. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I say good night.
We will have a short film for the next episode as well. This one, I'm sure I'm going to pronounce wrong. I apologize in advance. Pentatarmix Rubicular, I think.
Your mom.
Is how you say it. So... Yeah.
You take that back.
It might be hard to Google if you're, because I don't know if that's just different language or if that's sci-fi words or what that is. Mm. But anyway, that will be the short. It will be on our website, horseshowhotdog.com, and you'll find it there. And as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. If you get an opportunity, Amazon has got the new series from Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very specific. If you can appreciate just jet black humor and ridiculous kind of gory bits, and some just like I said, very dry, very dark humor, and a kind of a supernatural kind of a vibe, then this will be kind of up your alley. It's a, like it's very very Southern Gothic kind of. It's like a Hellboy, and then the show Grimm, and the show Justified, sort of kind of all mushed together in this kind of weird thing that it just doesn't feel like another thing that has an actual audience. But like,
so it's John Carpenter's Vampires?
No. It's a little, like I don't know. There's a lot of fun stuff in there that I. Like, But again, because of the level of content, it's like who are you? Like you're gonna scare the normal people with this kind of stuff. But I think it's a hoot. So if you get a chance, check that out. It's a lot of fun. The Bondsman.
Love you. And good night.
Oh, and by the way, yeah, bye. See you later.
He's very highbrow and lowbrow and middle brow. All of the brows are there.
All brow. Unibrow.
But not a unibrow. No, they're very carefully delineated.